This is Fresh Air. Happy New Year. We're looking back on 1993 with Fresh Air critics. And I don't know about you, but the year in movies is kind of a blur to me now. So here to put the year into focus, as far as movies, is our film critic, Stephen Schiff, who has, of course, made up his 10 best list. Stephen is also critic at large for The New Yorker magazine. Stephen, happy New Year and welcome.
Same to you, Terry.
So why don't we start with your countdown?
Well, let's do it backwards so that the suspense will kill our listeners out there. Number 10, I put Much Ado About Nothing, Kenneth Branagh's version of the Shakespeare play, which was bursting with life and energy and fun. Number 9 was In the Line of Fire, which I thought was the action movie of the year. Some people would have said The Fugitive. I thought that In the Line of Fire, Wolfgang Peterson's movie with Clint Eastwood and John Malkovich, had a lot more kind of depth and richness and a kind of primal nature to the conflict that really touched me. And Clint Eastwood gave a beautiful, beautiful performance in it. And Malkovich was sort of an embodiment of evil, the likes of which we rarely get in the movies. Number 8, The Snapper, which may not yet have come to a theater near you. It's Stephen Frears' very small-scale, very funny domestic comedy about a Dublin family and a pregnancy therein, written by Roddy Doyle from his own novel, and with wonderful performances, particularly by Colm Meaney, a wonderful Irish actor whom you'll recognize the moment you see him as the put-upon father. Number 7, Menace to Society. The brilliant debut film by 21-year-old twins, Alan and Albert Hughes, and written by a 23-year-old named Tiger Williams, a really searing portrait of ghetto life in Los Angeles and one that really, in a way, fights violence with violence. You come out of the movie devastated and frightened and maybe ready to take some kind of action. Number 6, Shortcuts, Robert Altman's controversial sort of epic with a cast of zillions and a zillion stories interwoven in the Altman style. Some people found it a downer. I found Altman's ability to make connections with all these stories absolutely exhilarating. Number 5, The Piano, Jane Campion's heralded film starring Holly Hunter and Harvey Keitel and Sam Neill, a movie that probably is a bit overrated now, but its overrating should not obscure its dreamlike beauty and the power of its grip on a viewer. Number 4, another movie that may not have opened everywhere yet, Naked by Mike Leigh, which is a really kind of scarifying and difficult and painful look at a misfit of genius in contemporary London, that misfit played beautifully by David Thewlis in probably the best acting performance I saw this year. Number 3, The Age of Innocence, Martin Scorsese's adaptation of Edith Wharton with Daniel Day-Lewis, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Winona Ryder, a film that I thought was true both to Wharton and to Scorsese, which takes some doing, and I thought it was breathtakingly passionate and beautiful, and contrary to some opinions, not at all boring. Number 2, 6 Degrees of Separation, which is slowly opening everywhere, Fred Skepsy's adaptation of John Guare's great play. And finally, number 1, probably not a surprise to a lot of people, Schindler's List, Steven Spielberg's masterpiece, a breakthrough, with a superb screenplay by Steve Zaillian and wonderful performances by Liam Neeson, Ralph Fiennes, Ben Kingsley, and a very large cast.
Interesting list. Stephen, were you surprised by Schindler's List? Surprised that Spielberg pulled off a serious film to your satisfaction?
I was completely surprised by Schindler's List, not because I thought him an incapable filmmaker. He's a great filmmaker, but he's never shown this degree of seriousness and this breadth of artistry. You know, the word on Spielberg has been that for years he's been trying to grow up, and with movies like The Color Purple and Empires of the Sun and Always. And The Color Purple, I think, is laughable and really a mess. And I think Empire of the Sun has wonderful things in it, but doesn't all hold together. Schindler's List, in that sense, comes from nowhere. It's a work of really astonishing maturity, a work of real kind of deep understanding. It has all the force of the greatest European art films, but it's told with an American energy and sort of urgency that really sends it along. Beautiful, beautiful black and white photography, which is also a very daring thing for him to do. Really mature, wonderful performances. It's hard to say where it came from, but it's a work of such passion and such anger that it really feels heartfelt and personal, and is the great Holocaust film, documentaries excluded.
Stephen, I think it's time for us to take a short break, so let's do that, and then we'll talk some more about the year in film. We'll be back. This is Fresh Air. Back with Fresh Air film critic Stephen Schiff, and we're looking at the year in film. Were there any formulas that continued to pay off this year or didn't do as well as they did in previous years?
Well, the heartening news is that most of the things that had always worked before stopped working this year.
And that is good news, isn't it?
I think it's great news. I mean, one of the horrible tendencies of recent years I'm afraid it's going to continue because there are already films along these lines in the pipelines, but movies based on television shows. I mean, this we need. But the Beverly Hillbillies flopped. The Coneheads flopped. Adam's Family Values is doing not very well. Wayne's World 2 is doing not very well. So maybe even though the Flintstones are coming along, and believe it or not, I think someone is making Car 54, Where Are You, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this is all happening, I think this is a trend that the box office itself will militate against. And sequels in general have not kept up with expectations. Sister Act 2 was a flop. RoboCop 3 was a flop. Look Who's Talking Now, I guess it was called. Look Who's Talking 3, that was a flop. Another stakeout will not give rise to yet another stakeout. And as I said, Adam's Family Values and Wayne's World 2 are doing disappointing business. So maybe it means that sequels will not be such a surefire thing, and therefore they will not be necessary. And maybe people will have to come up with brand new movies instead.
Wow, yeah. What about the stars who are supposed to be sure things at the box office? How
yeah,
they
how
do?
About that? I mean, Schwarzenegger was the most conspicuous flop in The Last Action Hero. Mel Gibson flopped in The Man Without a Face, although a lot of people say, well, that wasn't a real Mel Gibson movie. And of course, it isn't one of the rules of stardom that a star has to be, is only a star when he's in character. In other words, you know, John Wayne was always going to be a star if he was in a war movie or if he was in a cowboy movie. But you put him in The Barbarian and The Geisha as a diplomat and he's gonna flop. So similarly, Mel Gibson with half his face gone is really not the same Mel Gibson we know. However, Clint Eastwood and Kevin Costner have done very disappointing business in A Perfect World, for instance. Maybe there are no rules anymore except Tom Cruise.
And this is the year Harvey Keitel becomes a sex symbol.
Yeah, that's right.
Stephen, did you see the New Yorker cartoon?
Which one?
There's a New Yorker cartoon where a middle-aged couple is getting dressed for a dinner party or something.
Yes,
and the woman turns to the man and she says, if Harvey Keitel is at the party, I'm telling you, you're on your own.
I know. It's beautiful.
Well, this is the year that President Clinton spoke to big movers and shakers in Hollywood and basically asked them to try to tone things down on violence.
I know. You know, the violence debate has been going on in movies and TV for decades now. I see very little progress being made. I see the same arguments being made over and over. And I think that you cannot take seriously a Congress that wants to militate against violence when it's not going to militate against handguns and semi-automatic weapons. In other words, if you can't ban handguns and semi-automatic weapons and you want to ban pictures of handguns and semi-automatic weapons, it's going to be very hard to take you seriously.
I'll confess that this was the year of the GATT talks, and I found the GATT very difficult to follow. But at the very end of GATT, my ears perked up because suddenly it was about the film industry.
Well, that's right. This is a little complicated, but the controversy was that American films dominate movie theaters all over the world, and that includes in Europe. There are complicated tariffs and tax provisions that are involved with American films that the American film industry has found oppressive. It means that only a certain number of, for instance, screens, a certain percentage of screens, a certain amount of TV time can be devoted to American product. And Hollywood wanted to open up those markets and free them of tariffs. I am, in principle, anti-protectionist all the way down the line, except on this one issue. I actually do think that the protests of very respectable people like Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese aside, we need to actually control the domination of American film product over European, because otherwise you will just simply wipe out these film industries. And although at the present moment there may not seem a very strong argument to maintain the existence of the French film industry, believe me, one of these days there will be. And for it to be wiped off the map, which we do have the economic power to do, would be a real shame. So that is the one sort of place where the little demon of protectionism rears its head in my consciousness.
Well, while we're on the subject, any really exciting foreign films that you remember from this year?
No. Unfortunately, I thought this was really a very bad year for foreign films, for foreign language films we're talking about. Farewell, My Concubine was a very worthy, well-done, beautifully made sort of soap opera, I thought, and was interesting in that respect. Il Ladro di Bambini was a also worthy, well-made, somewhat sentimental, but very thoughtful film from Italy. I enjoyed the Finnish / French production La Vie de Bohème, which was Aki Kaurismäki's version of the La Bohème story, which was a very cracked version of the La Bohème story, which I liked. I liked it's a relatively old movie from Hong Kong, Hard Boiled by John Woo. It's a crazy action movie, and talk about a lot of violence. That would probably never, ever give rise to imitative violence on the street, because no one could possibly begin to accomplish that. But that was a movie I enjoyed. These are not distinguished films, however, and I think this is not a distinguished year for foreign film. But that's no reason to squelch entire industries through the cessation of tariffs.
Any exciting performances from newcomers, directors or actors that you saw this year?
Yes. I mean, the most amazing newcomer of the year is a guy named Leonardo DiCaprio, who was the star of This Boy's Life, a film that I thought was very, very good and probably would have made my top 10 list, except that Robert De Niro's performance in it was so heavy-handed. But this kid was fantastic, the best child actor that we've seen in a very long time. And then he turns up again in What's Eating Gilbert Grape in an entirely different sort of role. I thought that... Richard Linklater, who made Dazed and Confused, that was not a perfect movie, but it kept at least 20 different characters spinning sort of gracefully in the air and created a perfect portrait of American high school life in the sort of dope-hazed 70s. I thought that this guy's skill made him look like a sort of precocious young Altman, and this is only his second film. Along the lines of... somewhat more seasoned prose, I thought Groundhog Day, with its beautiful performance by Bill Murray, was a movie that shouldn't be overlooked. It had a premise that could have been merely silly, but it became almost metaphysical without losing any of its comic punch. I thought the directing job that Brian De Palma did in Carlito's Way, which was not really a very good movie, but it was so stunningly directed, especially the sort of action and atmosphere sequences, and that made it worth looking at again. And it had a great performance by Sean Penn. That's on my wish list, by the way. More Sean Penn acting, not directing.
Uh-huh.
And maybe after this year, I want to say more Robert De Niro directing, not acting, after A Bronx Tale. And no more movies, please, in which Keanu Reeves recites Shakespeare.
I wish you a very happy new year.
Same to you, Terry.
And thanks for being with us.
Bye.
Stephen Schiff is Fresh Air's film critic and critic at large for The New Yorker magazine. This is Fresh Air.